Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everybody. Well, today's Monday. It's the 21st of February. I can't believe where the year is going. It only seems to have just begun. Well, today we're going to start off the hour, as we always do on Mondays, with none other than John Bailey. He's a White Plains Citizenet reporter and publisher, and he's already on the line. Good morning, John. How are you, sir? Well, let's see. Wait a minute. Maybe something happened on our site here. Yep. It threw him off the website. There you are, John. I'm sorry. How are you?
All right, 38 degrees and sunny.
Well, thank goodness for that.
That's about the only sunny thing today.
Putting on my swim trunks.
Yes. Well, it's been a very cold winter.
Yeah,
it has. It's been a dismal winter. Fortunately, not a lot of snow, but just really dismal.
Well, it's
very cold.
It's been tough.
Yes.
Well, listen, one of the big things that I did notice was there was an assault at the White Plains High School. Evidently, some students attacked and beat up a kid in the school bathroom and was filmed on video camera. I don't know if you heard about it, but it seems four students from White Plains High School were seen on video slapping one of the kids around. Punched and kicked him on the floor. And the superintendent, Dr. Joseph Ricker, was outraged upon seeing the video. So he said that even though he was informed that the student who was attacked was known to his assailants, he said as for the student being hit and kicked, Ricker said that the individual was not seriously hurt. But he said, I'll tell you who is not all right. And he said that the school community is not all right. And he said, we're not okay. And he said an issue may be how and why we have degenerated into hurting people we know and the people we don't know, and most especially why. And that's a major question. You know, these sort of things shouldn't be thought of as only happening at the White Plains High School. It's the first time I heard of an incident like that at White Plains.
It happens too often
in Yonkers. I've heard of those more frequently. And I don't understand where we've come. And is this a form of a sort of passage by some of the young kids in high school? They beat up their friends? It never happened in my school when I was going to school. Then again, that was
if you were fighting, you got a lot of detention and some suspension, to say the least.
I hope
he suspended them.
I don't know what exactly he did, but the thing that's frightening is that it happens, and I don't know why we tolerate it as a society. And if there is not a better way than to admonish these kids. And I really don't know what to do with them because the law requires that they be permitted to go to school, right?
Expel them.
Well, that's what I would think.
I think you've got to expel. It should be put into the school code that the you can make this a learning moment. You could have a student court.
That's a good idea.
You could have a student court, and you have a defense attorney, a student defense attorney for the persons accused of doing the beating, and testimony is given, and then the student court and jury, there will be a jury, and the students decide whether the kid gets to go to school, get expelled, or gets detention and things like that. I mean, I don't understand why this can't be a teaching moment.
Well,
now, of course, if they find him not guilty, then, this creates a problem. But you cannot tolerate this because they're lucky they didn't have a murder in that boys' room or whatever. They're lucky to get in because that's what happens. You might have a weapon, but to my way of thinking, this is another instance of where persons take a video, put it up on the internet, and the news organizations have a field day with it. Look what happened to the TikTok videos showing the shoplifting last week.
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
That was a ridiculous news judgment. I raved about it I ranted about it on White Plains Week this week, and I felt it was irresponsible news judgment by those New York stations and whatever stations else carried it across the nation to put that up when it was a TikTok video.
Yeah,
please.
Exactly.
I mean, TikTok is not a news gathering source at all. It is a notch below YouTube, a big notch, and YouTube is just as irresponsible when they use stuff that is, sent in by the peanut gallery out there.
Yeah, it's so true. It's so true.
So what happens here is that if you do that, I don't know if the video was posted by a parent. I don't know if it was posted by the students involved.
Right.
But come on, this is symptomatic of that horrible coverage of January 6th.
Absolutely.
The media, when they publish or present on their airwaves, which they hold by license, they're licensed by the FCC. When they do that, they are responsible for the consequences, and they say, oh, we're just a messenger. You're not. You have judgment.
That's very true.
You have judgment.
And we forget that too often, that media does have a judgment. And they're a bit too lenient about that capacity. It's really very frightening. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Oddly enough, I have taken to publishing journalism truisms on my website each morning to sort of give people some sort of guidance during the day who do not go to church or anything like that, particularly people that report news or pretend to report news. And my phrase today, oddly enough, because it's President's Week, is judgment and guts.
Yeah, we have very few
judgment
of the
and guts. You have to have judgment and you have to have the guts not to do something or to publish something.
And that takes a tremendous amount of guts, and a lot of people don't realize the pressure to just marginalize a lot of the news that's out there.
Yes.
Because they just don't like to hear it.
Right.
Well, the powers that be don't like to hear it, but it needs to be told so the public does know what's really going on.
There has to be standards set. Look what happened down in New Rochelle when that person was murdered outside the school.
Yes.
And that would be the reaction to that. I don't know whatever came of that. And the reaction to that was just horrible. There was no reaction, was there?
No, there wasn't any.
That's been
the problem, because we don't admonish what we must, and we create these scenarios of complacency, because we've succumbed to this reality, this horror in our society, and too much of it's going on. People are getting killed walking the streets, minding their own business. People are getting shoved off, subway stations to their death. I mean, it's insanity what goes on, and this is all tolerable somehow. I don't understand it. You know, there are no seemingly no standards anymore. We used to respect one another, so it seemed.
Yeah. To Eric Adams' credit and Governor Hochul's credit, they are going to sweep the subways of the homeless.
That would help a great deal.
Yes. And this has been a bad year for the homeless.
Absolutely.
A bad winter. And I haven't heard of any freezers to death, but I mean, there has to be some, but I haven't heard of any. But I mean, that's what gets you. Media. They never go in and shoot video of a homeless person frozen on the street. I've never seen that. Oh, that's in bad taste. But they will put up something like that TikTok shoplifting. I mean, that was terrible. That is not news. It's a shoplift job. And everybody wants to know why, you know, it's shoplifting. It's a minor crime.
Media sometimes is so desperate, if they would do the job and report the news on a local level, then maybe we would all understand what's really going on instead of worrying about some shoplifter. You know, that what is it? They had nothing else to write about? There's nothing more to contemplate?
Exactly.
Really? I don't get it.
Exactly. And not only that, but one of the videos put out allegedly at the White Plains Mall was video from 5 years ago when the Turno watch place was smashed and grabbed. Remember that?
I don't remember that.
No, that video was 5 years old. That is journalistic negligence.
Well,
no, I didn't see that. But my wife
I didn't know it either.
Yeah, and the fact that they would go out and they say this happened 5 years ago, but please, that is just sensationalizing.
Yeah, that's the problem. Well, I want to ask you about something else. Evidently, the county, Westchester County, has chosen to form an opioid response and overdose initiative in light of the rise in overdose deaths in the last 2 years. And they want to do so by expanding the availability and the public to administer overdose intervention treatment like Narcan and lockboxes and fentanyl test strips.
Yes.
You know, which it sounds really good, but isn't this, you know, excuse the French, ass backwards? Shouldn't we be able to make sure that a lot of the fentanyl that is part of these drugs that kill these people who use them, and it's part of the epidemic? And why can't we stop this from really reaching to the kids and to the adults who use this stuff?
Why can't we close any pharmacy that dispenses fentanyl, and fentanyl from one of their prescriptions causes an overdose death? Why can't we do that? Let's put them out of business. Charge them with involuntary manslaughter. Involuntary manslaughter is the charge.
Yeah.
So why are we wasting our time? Yeah.
Why are we wasting our time? This is an efficacious standard for society to contend with this issue. I think it's outrageous.
Absolutely.
Why are we
and
wasting time
And how about
with
jailing doctors? That would make them
would
sit
be nice.
Up and pay attention.
It would be. It would be nice.
No, I mean, the physicians are the saints of America, and there are bad doctors, like doctors who participate in the fee-building procedure of ducking into rooms and getting paid for sticking their head in, seeing if the person is breathing when he's not really their case. The patient is that happened to my son, so I am very sensitive about
it. It happens very often. I remember even when I was in hospital, not this time around, but years ago, some doctor walked in, and I think it was like $150 just to say, hi, how you doing? And
absolutely.
Saying, who
that's
are
ridiculous.
You? That's what they did.
You know,
but the issue is not these doctors that are out of control. That's up to the hospital to take care of. But I wonder why we make believe that this sort of conduct is supposed to be is going to ameliorate this issue, and it's not. Why are our police not doing the job of preventing these drugs to be on our street? What is it that they don't know? And isn't this stuff coming from China and from other places? Why don't we have dogs sniffing away just to make sure that this thing doesn't come here? Who's making money on this while our kids are dying, including adults? What's the point? And it sounds so grand. You know, Dr. Amler, she should rot in hell. And that's the best I could say for her, because you know what? She's always too late. And she never talks up and expresses the real issue. And even George Latimer in this particular case, what are they getting around here? Where are the cops? Where is the law? Why don't we do it? And what are we wasting our time thinking
about
this?
Well, supposedly Mimi Rocha, the district attorney, is going to change that.
Oh, really?
And,
well, how long is it going to take? How many people
yeah,
have to
well,
die
she's only been
she
in a year.
It?
I mean, we had
well,
a
God
previous
forbid. Oh.
Yes. Well, the whole fentanyl problem boggles my mind that this drug is even allowed to be prescribed under the guise of relieving pain. But it is so addictive and so strong that organized crime is getting hold of it and cutting mm-hmm. their drugs with it to give people more of a high, but they do not have the judgment. They just want to use up the drug. Yeah, they don't care.
Exactly. That's
they
all.
Don't mind.
They don't care.
And
they're in
however,
business.
The preventive,
but we allow
the preventive
them to be in
things,
business.
The, yeah. The preventive things that Amler is suggesting, the lock boxes that are going to go into shelters and other facilities to short circuit an overdose that's happening and survivors' lives, that is a good idea. I don't understand why this hasn't been done before, and also the idea of putting in fentanyl detection strips that will tell you if whatever drug or pill you are taking has fentanyl in it and you cannot take it. But that's nice. You have to make the decision if it shows fentanyl in it not to take it. Some people don't have that judgment as an addict. Fentanyl addict.
No, they don't have
opioid.
A judgment, and they don't even,
no.
They're not concerned about it. They're concerned about getting a high. And but
that's
why
right.
do we allow it to
or
be on the street?
Or relieving their pain. Or relieving their pain. Let's not forget
right.
this pain reliever mm-hmm. business is absolutely gotten out of control. The drugs are too strong. The doctors can prescribe it, and prescriptions can be refilled, and pharmacies can refill them. I mean, and it's not something that is really refillable. I have to have my blood pressure medication and my prostate medication okayed by the doctors, and those
mm-hmm.
aren't killer drugs, but how can doctors just keep dispatching them and not monitoring what they're dispatching? They can't be, otherwise you wouldn't have that many deaths. Please.
Well, that's the point. And it's very nice to have the Narcan and
yes.
the lock boxes and the test strips, but why are we dispensing this stuff, and who is getting it? I mean, when you need to get a drug, are the people that are taking the fentanyl under prescription, are they dying? I don't think they're
that
the ones
has,
that are
that
dying.
Has yet to be.
Oh yes,
yeah,
so we'll waste another
about.
20 years and a lot of money, and we're not going to even amount to anything. So it was the same
thing.
Well,
how long have we been fighting
politics?
Drugs? Since the 1960s. The drugs have become an industry. They're an industry for enforcement organizations, government agencies, and you know, if
it's
you
a money maker.
Eliminated
it's a money
drugs,
maker for
yes.
government, but we haven't
right.
done anything in 60 years, and I don't see the arrest being made either. How come
I can
we got
remember,
pushers on the street?
Yeah. I can remember the Don't Say No campaign, remember?
Yeah, right.
In the 1990s, 25 years
Great.
Ago?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, it didn't amount to anything.
I think there are, aren't there
for,
more,
for,
you would know
advertising.
This, aren't there more addicts now than ever before?
Well, I don't know because I don't really keep
don't
track
know.
Of them. I figured if
no.
they die, they die. Thank God I don't know
right.
these people.
Right.
Hey, you know, people who love them should be worried about them, and if they can't control them, then there's nothing that could be done. It's impossible.
True. True.
And think of how much money it's going to cost just to get these people off the drugs, and who's prescribing the drugs to them in the first place, and why is it being prescribed? Is there no other way?
Well, this is a shady area because when the papers of record report on fentanyl, on all that, they say mm-hmm. who is making it. They say the terrible things these pharmaceutical companies have done to make
uh-huh.
it. They write up.
Mm-hmm.
They write about how doctors prescribe it, and some pharmacies fill the prescriptions, but then.
Mm-hmm.
The thing becomes addictive, so they increase it to get more of
effect.
So
what do we do?
There's something wrong with that. There is something wrong with that.
Well, don't we have government? Isn't there something that could be done to outlaw it in a city or in a state? God forbid, the nation? Oh, my God. You know, they're dropping like flies in Montana just as they are in New York City. There's no difference. What's the point? So why are we permitting it? You know, I'll tell
well,
you why.
Well, because
the
pharmacist
is making
made,
money.
Yes, that's right. Money talks in America.
Yeah,
no matter
the doctors
how
are
bad
making
the
money,
effect of
the
drugs
the
are.
The drug companies are making money. The distribution is making money. Wall Street is making money off of this. What's the point? Look how long it took for us to find the Sackler people who were making all these
And we haven't executed the Sackler people yet, have we?
No, we haven't.
They should be executed.
No,
they're mass murderers is what they are, and they knew
That's
it.
Right.
They knew it.
Of course they knew it.
That doesn't count for anything. Good God.
Evidently not. You make enough money, you can buy everything off.
Look at
I mean, it sounds like
good
a very
example.
Cynical, but the point is, it is what it is.
That sleaze, Jeffrey Epstein. He was okay. All of his misbehavior was okay.
Huh?
And like
that's what happens. If
a member of the royal family had a relationship with Epstein. Please,
they all have a relationship with people with money, and people with money can buy whatever they want. They can buy your soul. And they can buy your sex whenever they at the drop of a hat. They can own you, and they do.
Yes, and
hey,
unfortunately, people have to realize that they too. People have to realize that they too have to have judgment and guts to refuse.
Well, I'm actually very. I can't believe that a 95-year-old woman who happens to be the Queen of England, decided to rip her son for all the allegations against him, even though she gave him a little bit of time to, you know, to resurrect or to clean up his show. But evidently he couldn't. And she said, you're no longer part of the royal family. She stripped him of all the accolades that he'd gotten all those years. He's finished.
Right.
You know how strong that takes of a mother to do that? The Queen of England, no less. How many mothers have that strength? And she's 95 years old?
Exactly. Right. No, I mean, Queen Elizabeth is Queen Elizabeth is one of the great rulers of England. She has always had class. I don't particularly like the way she treated Meghan Markle, but you don't know how much of that was created by the press and by Meghan and
Yeah, I don't know. Where did this come from all of a sudden? And Harry says he doesn't feel safe coming to England. And don't come. Who needs you? I mean,
they
really
have
not.
To
what
keep their celebrity alive. They have no way of making money unless they're celebrities.
That's their problem. You know what? The Queen was not going to be, dismissive of them. And I don't know what the Queen does. She doesn't call me up. She doesn't tell me anything. I'm not her friend.
No.
I never met the woman, so I can't tell you what the story is. But I don't know.
But I mean, that was so out of character.
Either Harry or his wife. I don't know.
Yeah. But I mean, Prince Charles has just been a bad actor for many years. And he should not be king. I got to tell you that. They should not make him king of England. No, I mean, he has abrogated that ability.
Look, what can I tell you? You know, unfortunately, the former prince, the consort of the queen, passed away. It was an unbelievably wonderful man, evidently. And and the queen, exceptional as well. And the kids, sorry, they just don't have it. Or maybe wealth was too much for them. They couldn't handle it.
It's tough to be a parent. It's tough to be a parent.
It is. It really is. John, any last words from you as we approach the end of our half-hour segments, which flies every Monday? I don't know how we do it.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, as usual, we have a situation whereby COVID seems quiescent over the weekend, and then we go into a vacation week. And, this week we may be wrong. We may not see a new infections after school goes back into session in a week, and we go into March Madness and social gatherings, and St. Patrick's Day and St. Patrick's Day parades, and all those meaningless little events that we occupy our time with in America. But thank goodness the Olympics from hell is over.
Yeah, thank goodness for that.
I respect the athletes who participated and their will to win and perfection and all their skills. But I do not respect the Olympic Committee for even holding those Olympics in China.
Yeah.
That was a big mistake because it was used as a propaganda.
It's a pecking order at the end of the day in life and in every aspect of life, including with countries. And people capitulate. They lose their sense of what's right and what's wrong. And why? If we believe that the Uyghurs are being tormented by the Chinese because they're of Muslim faith, then why do we say one thing and then do another? Why do we validate a country like that that has literally, enslaved these people?
Yeah.
And used their organs for, so that they could sell it on the black market,
I don't think the Chinese emperors of the past were like that,
We're talking about the new China, the communist China.
Yes. Well, this is a long tradition that was established when the Chinese communists murdered students in Tiananmen Square with tanks. I mean, I remember that. And everybody said that was okay. It was not okay. it was not okay. But that's
the
way it
was treated.
You have to
remember that I remember there was one vivid picture of a man who points at a tank, and you know, holds him off just by his finger pointing. It was unbelievable. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, that takes guts. Unbelievable. Well, listen, John, we got to get going. We got to get to our next guest. So
judgment and guts,
people.
Judgment and guts. That's what is needed.
Well, we need to instill that. Take care, John.
Right.
All the best. Be well.
So on for now. Okay.
Bye. Let's bring in our next guest. It's going to be Ron Matten. How are you, Ron?
Good, Hezzy. How are you doing this morning?
Thank God, okay. Just a little bit flustered by all the stuff that goes on, you know, concerned about, you know, we're trying to come up with all sorts of solutions for fentanyl and Narcan boxes and this, that, or the other. The truth is, why can't we interdict these drugs? Why are we even permitting it to be prescribed? And then we create a problem. And the problem is because we're not taking these drugs off the streets. And why is that? I don't get it. Now everybody wants to look good.
I don't know. I know a lot of this fentanyl is being imported.
So why are we
China,
permitting it? It is from China. So why are we permitting it?
I don't know.
Don't get it. I guess somebody's making money. The Chinese selling it, the drug pushers that are pushing it, and the doctors who are making money trying to get these people to live another day. It's money talks, evidently. There used to be a judgment call for these sort of things, but evidently not anymore. Or maybe I'm just getting too old for judgment. Who knows? It's crazy, crazy world we live in. Well, anyway, like, what is on your mind? First of all, how are you doing on your 28-minute exercise regimen? I'm just so proud of you for doing that.
I gave my treadmill a rest yesterday. It's budget season at work, so I was working on spreadsheets a little bit yesterday. It got late, so I just went out for I actually did a 40-minute walk, which for me is just a little – it's just a little over 2 miles. I walked at a leisurely pace and gave the treadmill a break. I'll go back on the treadmill.
You're a
today,
good man.
And stretch out. Yeah, I'm starting to prepare my budget for work for next year. Looking at everything from electrical rates, gas, all of the utilities, and where we are in personnel. So that's moving along. I think we'll finish out the year okay. But I think I'm going to have to, you know, bolster a couple things for next year and see where that kind of sets us out. You know, it's hard to do budgeting on the college and university level when you don't, you know, because of COVID, we're not running regular years. So, you know, we're trying to figure out where we are utility-wise when we don't have a full campus. But you still have, you know, you still have to do snow removal. You still have all of those other services you provide that are not variable. So it's a little tricky, and then looking at where we have to be on our capital project. So all good stuff, though. All good
stuff.
It
sounds good.
I'm actually,
it'll keep you off the street.
I'm actually working on a different statistical analysis now. You may recall that George Latimer, the Westchester County executive, recently came out and said crime is down in Westchester, as well as Andrea Stewart Cousins. Came out and
I don't see it that way.
Reform. Well,
can
I don't
validate
either,
that?
I don't think.
How
well,
do
they
validate?
Can if they can if they cherry pick their data. George Latimer, who I have a lot of respect for, I think he's done some good things for the county, but on this he's absolutely wrong. He's cherry picked his data from 2017 to 2020. When he's been in office, bail reform started in 2019, so he's got the wrong data set. So, sure, crime overall has been down since 2010, It's been on a straight line downward trend.
Really?
And so I...
Where?
Well, since 2010.
Where was it down?
Since 2010. Not since 2019.
How?
When bail reform has been in effect. If you pick your sample space
good,
wide enough...
Where are the numbers? You know, I'm tired of this. Where are the numbers to prove that crime has gone down? Where are they? How many people less than last year or the year before or the year before
well,
that?
Again,
I don't get it.
So I'm not basing my numbers on the sample space taken by George Latimer or Andrea Stewart Cousins. I'm basing my sample space since bail reform. So I'm waiting for the 2021 year to come out. They don't have the third quarter populated yet, or at least not on
okay.
the data that I'm looking at. They have some raw data out there that I want to make sure that the samples taken in previous data sets are correct. But just for instance, I'm going to share 2019 and 2020 with you. So in 2019, there were 9,664 crimes committed in all of Westchester, of which 185 were violent crimes with a firearm. In 2020, we have 10,306 crimes committed. I don't know, new math or old math, that seems to me like an increase of 6%. Violent crimes with a firearm is 229 compared to 2019, which is 185. That's a substantial increase.
Right.
Property crime went up as well. 2019 property crime was 8,031 reported in Westchester. And in Westchester in 2020 was 8,721. And just like I said, you have to take into effect we were in COVID and a lot of people were in lockdown when I'm doing my budgets and looking at past things. We were in COVID in 2020 and a lot of people were in lockdown and these crimes went up.
So how did they come up
again,
with numbers that appeased the sensibilities of people and therefore they believe that the work is being done to mitigate this crime wave, and yet it's not. So who are we supposed to believe?
They've taken the wrong sample space.
Oh, they made an
sample
error?
Spaces.
Oh, God forbid. Don't they have people that they pay less money to validate all these things?
They've cherry-picked their data.
Uh-huh.
And
evidently we're stupid enough to believe it. Not you.
Well, New York City.
You know,
New York City, the safest year on record for New York City was 2019 in the last decade. You go from 2010 to 2020, the safest year was 2019 before bail reform was passed.
Mm-hmm.
That was the least amount of crime. It was on a downward trajectory. Bail reform was passed, and now we're on an upward trajectory. And I have to remind you that the crime statistics are lagging indicators. It means they're after the fact indicators. They don't lead the legislation happened and then the crime happens and then we get our data. So they lag the data. So the trajectory will even be higher as we go further in the future.
Are we susceptible to this con? Because I think a lot of people don't realize.
In the words of, I think Hillary Clinton started the phrase, it's fake news.
Mm-hmm.
It's false, patently false, that we don't have recidivism crime going on. And look, I understand there are some inequities with bail reform, okay? But that doesn't mean with bail. There's some inequities with the cash bail system. But that doesn't mean you throw it all out. Okay, look at what we had in Yonkers on Shipman Avenue. About 6 months ago, two women were murdered in their apartment by the younger woman's boy. It was a mother and daughter, by the daughter's boyfriend, who was out on bail. So this is costing real lives. And to double down right now that you know, the our leaders are doubling down by going with this clean slate law. It hasn't been fully developed yet, but it's basically after a certain amount of time your record gets expunged. They haven't decided whether it's 7 years after you're finished with your incarceration or if it's a certain number of years when you're no longer supervised by the criminal justice system. But
So what are they trying to achieve by all of this? If they expunge your record, so it seems like you're a regular upstanding character after a time. And what are we trying to mitigate here?
So they're basically saying that people who have records can't get jobs.
I see. So because they have a record, we now need to expunge it so that they can get a job? Is that the way
I guess that's supposed to work?
The
logic. That's the logic involved.
Uh-huh.
I mean, there are other ways.
Okay.
There are other ways to work through this, and you can't take this information out of employers' hands because you know, you have employers who work around children. You have employers in hospitals with drugs, and we talked about fentanyl. And if you have people with prior records. Employers need to know that. Employers need to know that so they know how to safeguard. I'm not saying the person with a record does not deserve to be hired, but there are other ways to mitigate this through other programs and making sure that a person who has a record and has fallen off of the track of right has a way of getting on and has a touchstone to stay on rather than just saying we're going to expunge your record. So they are doubling down in Albany on bad and failed legislation.
Well, so who's pushing this agenda? This comes from both our Senate and our Assembly.
Oh, I know it's coming from the Majority Leader's office. I'm sure there are
in the Senate and in the Assembly. So
right.
Why are they trying to? What are they trying to promote? So that people can get jobs? Are they qualified for that job, or are we just going to give them a job? Do what? Do they have the skills for it? They're probably on the street robbing people or doing whatever they're doing in order to make a living. Because if they're not making a living now, what's gonna bring them into a 9-to-5 job? Do they have the skills for it?
Well, yeah, what's going to bring them into a 9-to-5 job is training and getting the skill level.
But we're not offering that. Why isn't the state working on building the capacity? You know, look, if you look for a job now and you don't have an education, they want to make you a bank guard. That's really wonderful. And what do they pay? I bet you they don't even pay $10 an hour.
Well, it's I believe many parts of the state are $15 an hour now. Anywhere from 11 to 15, depending on where you live in New York, is the minimum wage.
Okay, but the point is, even $15 an hour, what do they work? They work 40 hours a week, for the sake of argument. So that's 150. That's $600 a week. Can they pay their rent on that? And
no. It's, look. When I first started out, I worked two jobs. Some people do have to work more than one job in order to make a go of it.
Absolutely.
I worked as a housekeeping supervisor for a school from 4 to 12
mm-hmm.
at night, and then I'd get up at 5 in the morning and I would drive a limo for airport calls for a few hours
mm-hmm.
to make some extra cash. Sometimes
right.
on the weekends I drove a cab. You know, you do what you need to get by.
Right.
So I understand what it is not making a living wage.
So what we're really seeing in all of this is that there are problems with our system. We're not training kids in school. They're not getting educated. some of them show up and some of them don't. You know, how do we fix this? Because not everybody can be on the dole for nothing. And what are they returning for that benefit? And that's what's so difficult to comprehend. So how much longer can we keep this thing going up and up and up? And we're also, people are coming into the country as well without an education or even speaking the language on top of everything else.
That's true. Look, we were based on immigration, and I actually did another paper that says one way of preserving Social Security is increasing immigration. But when you increase immigration, mm-hmm. you also look for certain standards that people have to meet. And I'm not saying that everybody has to be college educated to come into the country, but I am saying you need to have enough people at the upper end of the socioeconomic scale so that you can allow people from the lower end to come in. Right now, our Social Security system is, and this is a little bit of an older statistic because I did this report about 2.5 years ago. Our Social Security system is slated, right now we're running a surplus on Social Security. By about 2032, we're going to run a deficit, and that deficit will only be sustainable until about 2070, at which point we no longer have money in the account. So we do need mm-hmm. to increase the number of people who are working, and being birth rates have fallen off in this country. Immigration is another way of increasing the workforce to allow more people to put into a Social Security system. Remember, it's not a pay-as-you-go system. The people who are working now are paying for the people who are currently retired.
Right.
The demographic change when the baby boom generation, which is retiring now, is stepping in, and not as many people were born into that generation as are currently working. So that's why we do need either an increase in the Social Security tax or an increase in the workforce. It's easier to have an increase in the workforce. You have to remember, Social Security is actually an insurance policy. It's not a savings mechanism. Basically, you are paying a premium, and that premium means that you can collect a portion of that back as you mm-hmm. when you retire over a long period. And generally, remember, it was started in 1938 or 39, and it was only meant to cover 4 years of your life at 40% of your expenses at that time mm-hmm. in the 30s. Right. You know, we live a lot longer now. And some people expect it to be more.
What you're basically saying at the end of the day is the system is broken and we have no way to fix it, and certainly not on people who don't have an education and do not earn a living.
Well, and that's true. If you're not paying in, you're not going to collect Social Security. And if you're used to collecting from the government and not working, You don't have that standard work ethic and the ability to go in. And these are the things we have to address in schools. I don't know that we are addressing the young in schools. I did read a article somewhere that we have a 91% graduation rate.
Where's the proof for that?
Well, and again, and,
where's
and
the
what's
proof?
What's the qualification for graduation?
I don't know what the qualifications for graduation in a Yonkers school is, and nor do I believe what's her name, the woman who writes these press notices. She's been lying, whatever you want to call her, forever and ever and ever. She's a shill. She's absolutely a waste of time, and I don't even know why we pay her. She's not even in Yonkers. She's working out of Florida.
I'd rather see what the region's stupid name. Okay.
Why are we paying her? For what? Did she have the figures in front of her hands? You know, this city is getting really, it's really pathetic already. When do we ever have proof for anything? You know what?
I feel like
I'm in the 1940s in Europe, where everybody said that the sky is red. When you looked up, it was really blue, but because everybody told you it was red, you said it was red too.
Hezzy,
I mean,
I don't want to get
insanity.
Your blood pressure up. That's the,
no, my blood pressure is
fine.
Okay. My blood pressure is fine. The thing that's wrong is that we have no proof on any level. That's it. Show me
the goddamn
proof, and then I'd be happy. I want to see legitimacy.
I would rather see what the rate is for getting a Regents diploma compared over the last years, which is independent of Yonkers grading system. How many students sit down, take the Regents exam, and receive a New York State Regents diploma rather than how many students graduate?
Well, that's the point, isn't it? Do you know that a lot of kids go to school but never show up, and you don't have to show up to graduate? Do you know that we pass people along from grade to grade to grade in Yonkers, and they never even attend school, but they get a degree?
Oh, that also happens in New York City.
Well, good for us, good for them in New York City, but we're not talking about New York City. We're talking about Yonkers.
I had a relative of mine who was passed along from fourth grade into fifth grade. Who had achieved 30% in math and 46% in English. And I went to the school principal and I said, how can you pass this person? We have students who've done a lot worse. And at that point, we took that individual out of the school system and sent him to a Catholic school.
How did he do in a Catholic school? Did he get an education?
There were some troubles there, but, you know, he moved along. You know, I don't want to get too much into somebody, you know, it's a relative. I won't say who it is, and I don't want to get too much
into
their personal.
Just one example, that's all.
Personal stuff. But, yeah, it is an example of someone. They had a tough time in Catholic school because they did not receive the tools that they needed in public school. And that's
okay.
That's a problem right now. That, you know, and when they talk about inequities in school, those are some of the inequities start with the families who expect their children to succeed without their intervention. Look, neither of my parents had graduated high school, but they did send me to Catholic school, which provided a little more of an individualized learning environment that you don't get in public school.
Right.
Because they knew their shortcomings on their educational scale. And sometimes you can't, you know, every student, every child is entitled to an education based on their needs, not necessarily based on their ability. So that's something I don't think that public schools are well designed to do. Remember, it's a factory. Public schools were designed on a factory model, and it's designed all the way back from the agrarian society, where the school calendar, you know, it actually started a little later. You know, you went out, you got your fall harvest, and then you went to school, and you're off in the summer to help with the family farm. We've not gotten past that. So I was actually.
Well, I don't know how that. I don't know how that affects anything today. So that's how we began. So what? It doesn't deny people an ability to get an education if they want one.
Oh no, I'm not saying. I'm just saying it's an antiquated model, and I think it can be improved upon. But again, it's the general model across the United States. It's not. You know, it's not any that model is not any different in Yonkers than White Plains.
So we're talking
or New
about,
Rochelle.
Yeah, but there are problems in New Rochelle and there are problems in White Plains. There are all kinds of problems everywhere. So where are we going wrong and why can't we start to fix it? Or are we even bothering to fix anything? And then are we meeting the needs of our pupil, population if they're not better?
We can go back to the original conversation which started with data. If you're not producing the right kind of data and you're not telling the truth and you believe your own lies, you're never going to fix it.
Right.
And that's the problem. When somebody is writing a press release on whether you have a 91% graduation rate or whether you have a drop in crime after the bail reform, you've created a false narrative. You don't know that you can't fix a problem when you're not taking the right data to know where that problem arises.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's right.
That's where we are, where we like to believe our fake news reports because it makes us feel good.
Well, I guess we all want to feel good.
You can't argue
bottom
with
bottom line.
Hezzy, that one you can't argue with.
No, I can't argue with that one. I'd rather feel good than feel bad.
So, we like to pretend that we don't have crime out there. Meanwhile, catalytic converters are being cut out of cars all across Yonkers, particularly on Boston
mm-hmm.
Road. We had a guy out on bail on Shipman Avenue. Who unfortunately killed two residents there. How many reports of gun crime? And the guns don't cause the crime on their own. You can blame them coming from other states because you want to deflect, and that's really what this is. This is deflecting.
Yeah.
It's not the gun. The gun didn't run out in the street and cause the crime. But how many instances of gun crime have we seen in the last 2 months? Just 2 months. It's ridiculous because we're believing a false narrative. And when you believe the false narrative, you're never going to solve the problem.
So where are our elected officials who can conceivably change the equation? And what's so difficult for those that vie for elected office who can't seem to do the job? I don't comprehend that at all. I don't see why they're running for office if they can't do the job. And if you spend 2 years or 4 years of a term after being elected and you realize you've gotten nowhere, why would you want to run again? And why would the people have to suffer your lack of integrity and capacity? This is what I don't get. When are we going to wise up?
I guess a free car, a pension, health insurance.
I guess I'm in.
You know,
I could just sit there.
For some people, that's a retirement plan.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm not going to say all of our politicians because there are many, and I don't want to paint with that broad brush, but there are many people there who are there for their own purposes and willing to believe the false narrative. And that's why we're left with what we have.
Is it the fault of media that we're not telling people that something is a false narrative as opposed to others that say,
I, look, I don't think there aren't, and again, I'm going to say, there aren't a lot of people out there with the capacity to pull this apart. People tend to look at causality and, they feel they empirically know something, so they said, okay, it just fits right. But you don't know it until you take the data apart. You really have to get down to the data, make sure you have the right the right sample space, and make sure that there are anomalies in all data. Data is a statistical device, and there's what we call statistical noise. So things. Everything will always eventually revert to the mean. You just have to know what that mean is.
When you live in a society, and not every society that way, when you've done the city, one community or another, some will give you facts and others will give you nothing. Some will respond and some will not respond. So where do you find all this stuff? And there's so much cover-up in governments as well.
Well,
what's going on?
Look, So when CompStat first came out, if you remember, so CompStat came out around broken windows policing,
yeah,
go after the lower level crime, which absolutely, I'm going to tell you, that does work. We've moved also away from that. So you go after the criminals who are likely to graduate to higher crimes, and you start taking them out of the pipeline. But this CompStat came out during that era. A guy named started it within the NYPD, and you know they had to make sure they got the crimes right. So there was a couple of years in the beginning of the program where crimes got a little bit reclassified, and that skewed the data as well. So you know what was a felony, what was a misdemeanor, what was a domestic, what was a hate crime. All of these got kind of moved around a little bit, but once you've got the definition correctly, you want to stick to that. Now, I don't know what Yonkers, you know, New York City publishes their crime statistics. They publish their crime statistics.
Yeah, but Yonkers doesn't. Point. I remember when Yonkers did institute the CompStat program, and under the present administration and the present, police commissioner, he stopped using it. And I remember years ago. Go ahead. Well, I remember years ago. Well, finish your thought.
He's calling it now predictive policing, but I don't really know if he's actually utilizing it.
Well, I don't know. He hasn't sent me a notice of what he's calling it, or if it's under a new name, I don't know. All I know is that he had stopped using it when it was very pertinent and it was able to mitigate a lot of crime in the past. And he just expunged it for whatever reason. I don't know why. But it's very, very, I remember the days when we were supposed to send an email to the state to advise them of who got arrested and for what reason. And guess what? Yonkers was really smart. They said, you know what, we'll send them a letter. And you know what? The state got even smarter than Yonkers. And they said, you pull this one more time, and we're going to make sure you'll get nothing from us. Send it by email, or we're going to fine you $1,000 a day for every infraction. And guess what? The state won. Because you don't play games with people who want to mess with you in the wrong way when it's not the law. And the reason they did that was so that they wouldn't have to arrest people that they knew and they would be exonerated in the court. Isn't that amazing?
Mm.
The stuff that went on in this city and still goes on to this day is absolutely outrageous. And if people want to believe, you show me the proof. When you can prove to me what's really going on, then maybe I'll believe. Until then, I'm very wary of statistics by idiots who don't even stay in Yonkers, don't have a clue what's going on, and get a press notice to tell them what they should be writing. And they have no proof.
Yeah. No, we're in agreement.
Well, anyway, so hopefully we'll be able to give our kids a better education, because right now we're failing.
I don't even know why we have to.
How is it that 91% graduation is even supposed to be sufficient? What happened to 100%? Who's dropping out and why are they dropping out? 9% of our student population is dropping out. Is there a reason for that? I don't get it.
I thought you would be delinquent.
Yeah. Wouldn't they come after you? Wouldn't the cops come after you? Where is your child?
You have to. I don't know who handles the data. I don't know who handles the data for the Yonkers Public Schools. When I worked at Greenwich, we had somebody who did a lot of data analysis for us. Everything from, you know, where the population was growing, you know, to which schools were falling behind, and it's a great reference to put
we
all
don't
this
have
up
that.
There. Yeah,
we don't
we,
get
we,
that.
We had
in
a
Yonkers.
Dashboard. we had a requirement to create a dashboard within our individual departments to show, you know, important key directional indicators. You know, one of them certainly would be graduation rates, but the other one would be, you know, population increases within areas. It could be basically, you know, if you can drill down to a particular school that's having a problem, you can start to see if that's a problem with the teachers at that school or with the administration at the school or even with the facility. If your students don't have a comfortable room temperature, you know, free of noise and everything else, that impacts learning as well. That's an external factor. We found that out. I put in a capital program to replace a lot of our HVAC systems because they were too loud, and the faculty had trouble. The faculty had actually trouble speaking over some of them. So we moved away from window air conditioners and everything and went to what we called a library standard, which was a unit that produced no more than 33 decibels. So there's all really important things that it's not just curriculum related. It's a whole environment. It's an ecosystem education.
Well, maybe that's one of the problems. Our schools are old. Many of them
are
over 100 years old, cramped, not enough room. And I don't know what we're doing to try to ameliorate that either.
And, you know, that's one of the things we learned from COVID. Look, I went to school in the 70s, elementary school, and, you know, our classrooms didn't have any air conditioners. We opened the windows. Somebody was assigned to open all the windows, and even in high school, we didn't always have air conditioning. That's something that's unheard of now. Just even because of COVID, you know, you want to have a certain number of air changes in a room, a minimum of three air changes in a room when you've got 15 to 30 students in that room. Because what happens is the carbon dioxide levels go up. And when the carbon dioxide levels start to saturate the room, the students get sleepy. So, you know, you want to make sure that you've got enough air changes, that you've got good air levels, that the students aren't sleepy. They're alert. So there's all these factors that go into education that people don't realize. The most important is the teacher in the front of the room, but it's not the only factor when you're trying to educate a child. Actually, I take that back. The most important factor is the parent, and that the parent
is
engaged in
right.
the child's education.
I would think so. Yeah, we do have a different population than from the 50s and 60s today. A lot of people are not earning enough money. They're new immigrants, may not speak the language. They may not be earning enough money to be able to go to school to find out what's really going on. We haven't supplied all our kids with a Chromebook or even internet service so that they could function on a much better level. Just so many levels of deficiencies. And, you know, we could lose a whole generation of students if we don't start to fix some of this stuff. And
you know,
it's a great
opportunity to look at it. Look, we got some COVID funds. I know there was a recent post by the PTA president that said next year we may start losing some of our social workers and guidance counselors in the schools because they were supplied with the COVID funds. And that would be a real shame because when your active shooter programs for keeping gun violence out of schools, it heavily relies on the social workers and the guidance counselors to be able to identify, again, if the program is properly implemented, to be able to identify those children who are antisocial and have some issues and trying to work with them. That's another place that schools are very important, particularly where parents are not fully engaged in their child's education.
Is there a way to compensate for that sort of thing? And is there enough funding to actually manage all of this? Or is a school, I don't know how many kids we have going to school in Yonkers, population-wise. I don't remember the number.
It's about 26,000 to 27,000 students.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Sorry, that's right. I'd forgotten that. But I think that we lost about 3,000 kids in the last year. I don't know where
they
went.
Yeah, you mentioned that. I, you know, and again, I don't, you know, you've got a better ear to the ground than I do on you know, I haven't seen that on a report because I don't have sources except for, you know.
Well, they don't want to show it because the bottom line is if you got 3,000 kids that and the cost of each child going to school is 27,000, you multiply that, that's over $5 million a year. The question is, what are we doing with that extra money?
It doesn't come exactly. You actually lose that in some. You know, if you lose a child and it costs $27,000 to educate, actually I think it's 24 in Yonkers is what we spend.
They reduced it.
Well, 27 is what they spend in New Rochelle. 32 is what they spend in White Plains. If you do the straight math on the overall budget divided by the number of students, I think it comes out to about 24,000. At least that's what it was last year.
You know what's very interesting is, like, I don't disagree with you, but all I know is Yonkers has always said it's 27,000. So why have they been lying to us? That's what I'm getting.
I don't know.
When do we ever get the truth?
I prepared
Maybe it costs
for
us 50,000, and we don't even know it. I don't even understand anymore what the numbers mean. These people
Again,
lie.
I took my figures
day in and
I
day out.
I took my figures. You're right. I took my figures from the Yonkers Public School website. I was last year preparing for a debate that the Yonkers PTA put together.
Right.
So I had my $24,000 per student number from a website. And again, it may not be correct. It may not be accurate. But the point I was saying is when you take a number of students out, You know, there's variable and there's fixed costs. You know, your fixed costs don't diminish. So they stay the same. And the variable costs aren't that much. So once, you know, you can add another student to a classroom and it's not that much, you know, it doesn't really cost anything extra to put a desk in. But, you know, when you talk 10 students in a classroom, and again, they need to be grade specific. So you may have a large
No, I understand, but the point is, if you're losing 3,000 kids, doesn't that change the equation somewhat financially?
It does. It does change it somewhat.
Somewhat.
You know, and,
I would tend to think it would probably change something at least 70 to 80%. I mean,
and
how much?
Out of what?
What does that go
the,
for?
The other thing that
was 27,000
right, well,
or 24,000
the other
for
thing,
that matter.
The other thing that was noted by the KG&D report, the architects that they did that maybe in 2015, is that almost every one of our schools were deficient. They were deficient because they had no ADA accessibility. They weren't maintained. They had non-functioning heating systems or roof leaks or mold. All of these, you know, it was just rampant through the district. I don't know how it is now. This was an old report I was given as a sample when I was bidding for architects. But our school, and this is what was submitted to the state, just about every school, including some of the newer ones, were deficient for educating students because we don't maintain it. You know, it's like a credit card. If you just make the minimum payment on the credit card or you barely make the minimum payment, you know, you still end up with debt. And that's what we do.
I understand all that. So why is it that we had schools that had funding and we didn't keep them up? Where is the failing? It's not in the school. The school didn't create it. Don't we have people that work there in the school to fix this, the other? So where's the failing? Not the teacher.
The failing's on the administration. There needs to be a master plan.
Why didn't they do the job? Why didn't they budget for it then?
I, I, I can't understand that. Look, I hire an engineering firm who comes in. I have them go through the entire district, look at each piece of equipment, give me a usable life on it. This thing will last for 30 right. years, and I know in 31 years I've got to make an investment. If they say you got right. 5 years left, you got 5 years left on this boiler, I know in year number six I've got to make an investment. And you know what happens?
Right.
With 99% of the institutions out there, you don't have the money to keep up on it. But at least if you have that information, you know what your liabilities are moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
So you can say, well, look, it says 6 years. Maybe I can push out two more. And what happens is, so your replacements are funded on capital, which is generally borrowed money. Your upkeep is on operating. And then you wind up spending operating money for where you should have spent capital money, and the money, the operating money pot gets smaller and smaller when you should have made the investment initially. So what you do by spending money to make that boiler run a little longer, you're taking that away from the students. So money you spend on upkeeping the building, you're taking away from the education side of the ledger. So you have to be smart about
real,
it.
What we're basically saying is then we're not fully funded for education and for upkeep of the structure. So then what are we doing well at?
Well, I believe that's correct.
Schools
are failing. That's because there's been years of neglect, deferred maintenance of keeping these structures operating. Again, it gets back to the same thing. It gets back to data. There's a cost per square foot to operate a building. And if you're spending less than that cost per square foot, you're gonna have to make that payment sometimes. You're gonna lose a school. You're gonna close. Look, we have to rebuild Gorton. Gorton is in such bad shape that it doesn't pay to put more money in Gorton. It's cheaper to build a new building at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, that's what happens when you neglect something. You know, it's like you're borrowing. You know, you're borrowing on your revolving credit to the point where you can't pay it off anymore and you're just going to declare bankruptcy.
Oh, God. You know, it's like I can appreciate, the issues left and right, but so maybe we're not taxing our citizenry enough money to keep up, you know, what the infrastructure, because then we're losing money every year.
Or we're spending in other areas when we hire people for jobs where maybe they get out early, or
they don't meet the time frame. They're just right. out. The
or
people who are employed never
have,
show up to work.
We just create a job for somebody because there's no civil service.
Right.
You know, there's no civil service administration in the city of Yonkers. I want to go work for DPW. I have a friend. I get a job at DPW.
Yeah, that's the problem.
And again, I have nothing
problem.
Against the DPW workers, and I'm not saying they're not working. I'm just saying that, you know, it's too easy to do a favor for somebody and give them a job. Same thing in the schools. It's too easy to hire somebody and give them a job because you don't have to take a test. You don't have to be accountable. You know, there's a standard.
You have to take the test, but sometimes if you know the right people, you don't have to take the test. You don't even have to pass the test. You don't even have to qualify for anything, but you can rise all the way to the top. You know how many people have become sergeants in our police department and do not qualify?
And that's how you manufacture votes.
That's how you hold on to your vote. That's how you buy your vote. Unbelievable.
No. Until we fix that, we're never going to find any real change.
Oh, God. I feel depressed. It started off like a good day.
Well, you know, I mean, you can only...
Or do I have to just submit that my thinking is all wrong, and therefore I'm the failure, and everybody else is right? But I don't know if we can continue to function like this.
Change doesn't come easy. I used to have a boss. He would, you know, I worked. We would take over school districts to kind of fix them. You know, we would.
Uh-huh.
I worked for a company that would look at a school district, come in, and make changes to get at least the facilities portion working correctly. And some of these school districts,
okay,
we come in and they were really in bad shape. And my boss would look at me and he'd say, well, how do you eat an elephant? And the right answer is one bite at a time. So, you know, you can't look at everything that's wrong. Yeah. You can't look at everything that's wrong and be overwhelmed by it. You just got to look at what's in front of you that you can fix today.
Well, I do believe in that. I do believe in that. I didn't know about the elephant analogy, but, yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me, too. So the question is then, are we on the right footing? Do we recognize that we have so many things that are failing because of a lack of funding and capacity? So what are we doing to make those changes? Or does that require new government of some sort? You know, we need to have responsive city council. We need to have a responsive mayor. We need a responsive departments, that run this, that, or the other. Are they all functioning?
The emperor,
I don't know.
The emperor has no clothes. I'll leave it at that as an answer.
Okay, that's a good one. I'll have to remember.
You can read
that
into that what you like.
Okay. I'll have to get a new pair of clothes. I feel naked now. Oh, God.
You can read into all of that.
One thing's for sure, since you're doing your exercise regimen, you're going to look good whether you're naked or not. So you're in perfect
shape. Well, I don't know if I'm going to look good. There's still a lot of excess fat there.
I see.
But it's not about looking good. It's really about heart health. And just trying to look. I will say, so I haven't really lost any weight. Part of this was I was stuck on a weight level, and I was trying to lose weight, and I haven't. But I've taken my resting heart rate from 64 beats per minute down to 60 beats per minute so far.
That's phenomenal.
So I think, you know, even though I haven't lost weight, my body composition may be similar. I have improved my cardiovascular health. So
that's very good.
I think it's all worth it. So dogs.
I'm not on a constant level, you know, like you're down to 64. So I could fluctuate with my heartbeat at times from as low as 59 to even up to as much as 65. So it's never the same every day. So
I'm taking an average of, you know, also I have an app when I sleep. It measures my lowest heart rate when I sleep, and I'm going by that. But if you're down to 59, Hezzy, that's pretty good.
Well, they worked me to death. Except they avoided the death part. So, I'm at their beck and call. What's the last part? Go ahead.
Well, the last interesting thing I'm going to say is it's been reported that the elevator will be fixed in 2 weeks in City Hall.
You're kidding me. That's phenomenal.
I'm sorry, not 2 weeks, 2 months, 2 months, 2 months. Sorry,
that's
months.
Better. At least
so
there's hope
may,
at the end of the.
Does that mean we may see you at a council meeting?
Oh, yeah. Well, I wasn't going to climb up four flights of stairs with my rollator. Forget it. That's just pushing it a little bit too far. So, I would like that. I would show up for that.
Yeah, so maybe they'll have a ribbon cutting ceremony.
Oh, that would be very nice. You know, for that, it might even be worthwhile to take a picture of the elevator functioning. But look, you know, again, the building's old, and I guess somebody figured it out, and they apportioned the funding for it because people do want to attend.
I went to the affordable housing debate or meeting on the council meeting prior to November. Last election, and they wanted to, you know, there was an attendee there who had an oxygen tank and couldn't come up to speak, and they, you know, she had to speak by phone, which was, mm-hmm. and at that point, the elevator had already been out for a couple of months. So I get it.
Yeah.
It's old. It's hard to get parts for some of these. And that, again, that's why you plan. That's why you have a capital plan. And you see what what's the useful life left on this. And if there's no more useful life, or if you know you can't get parts, you know that it's got to go in the capital plan.
That's very true as
because
well.
Because you spend too much money out of your operating budget trying to maintain it, then it's really not a savings any longer.
I think our
time is just about ending. I was on for almost an hour today, which was
which
nice.
Very delightful. Except nice. I only thought you were going to be on for a half an hour, but it was really exhilarating, and my blood pressure probably went through the roof. You know, but that's okay.
I tried to keep you calm, Heather.
No, I was calm. You know, this was my calm moment. You know, I vacillate between hot and cold. Anyway, you just have a great week. I'm very proud of your success, and I think another few more months, I might even be able to join you on your workout.
That'd be great. And hopefully in a few months, I'll see you in a council meeting. There is a council meeting this Tuesday. I believe they will be voting. One of the key issues they're going to be talking about will be voting to take out the professional engineering requirement for the commissioner of buildings.
Yeah, I know that they want to get rid of that.
That's on the agenda for Tuesday.
So that'll be interesting.
Tomorrow.
Just to see how it goes.
Look, I think it's probably a 5-2 or 7-0 vote. So I don't expect there to be any surprises tomorrow.
No, I don't think so.
Jordan will be removed.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyway,
I'm ready for it.
I took my pill already.
I'm ready.
I'm expecting 500 words on what that means to Yonkers.
It means nothing because we're going to continue the process. So, look, the beauty of it is that unfortunately under Peachy, who was the head of the department, he had all the requirements. However, he didn't move any of the stuff that needed to get done forward. And
right.
So we've languished quite a bit. I don't know why.
We never understood the rationale
for it.
It's really not good when people put it. Look, it hurts the contractors who can't start the work. It hurts the homeowners who want to get things done, and it hurts development and jobs in the city when you can't get buildings up and you can't get inspections done. So it is a terrible thing. It hurts the city economically. I've always advocated that they could go with a third party reviewer if the party submitting plans wants to pay for that, and that would really move things along. So if you went out and got an engineering firm on retainer to review the documents for code, that's what the town of Mount Pleasant does. I was able to get a
That's a great idea. I like it.
Yeah. I got a building permit in 30 days because they went to a third-party plan reviewer and we were willing to pay for that.
That never came up here, and I wasn't smart enough to think that one out on my own.
Yeah, well,
so
again, for the big developers who want to get things done, and even for the homeowner, if I want to, you know, build something and I'm willing to pay, you know, an extra, let's say it's 20% because you're hiring outside labor, I'll get that expedited. And the other thing it does is it takes somebody out of the queue in the building department, which makes them go quicker because now they've got a third-party reviewer, and they've taken that one plan review out. And you've made your queue smaller. So you may find that...
So are they going to incorporate that? That makes
sense.
Are they going to incorporate that?
I don't know. I've never made that... I may have made that suggestion during my campaign, but I don't think it was heard. It was really heard. But, again, there's nothing wrong with outsourced labor for certain things like that, particularly if you want to get things out. So...
All right, we'll just have to hope for the best. You never know. Maybe. Maybe they heard the show, and maybe they'll think of that putting it in. Sounds good to me.
Well, happy
as
President's
usual,
Day,
Ron,
and
happy President's Day to you. Thanks, Ron Matt.
All right.
What a pleasure. All the best. Take care. Bye. Well, there we have it, Ron Matten, a Yonkers politician. Evidently, he's got some good ideas, and it's a shame they haven't been incorporated, but you never know what the reasons are. So many reasons for all kinds of things, and little do I know what the rationale is for everything. So let's just quickly look and see what else is happening on the world stage. Bear with me a moment. 1 second. Okay, bear with me a moment because I need to find out. Yeah, this thing is an endless barrage of what's going on with Russia and Ukraine. Okay, so first let's find out what's going on. Putin's evidently is going to decide whether to recognize the breakaway regions of Ukraine. Well, isn't that special, as if we didn't know that was coming. Moscow says that Ukrainian armored vehicles have tried to enter Russia. Isn't that sweet? You would think that they would start the war. That doesn't make sense, though, either. Kiev calls Russia's allegations fake news, which it is. Ukraine and the West are on alert for Russia creating a pretext to invade. Macron proposes the Putin-Biden summit. The White House says the summit is possible only if Russia does not invade. So Russian President Vladimir Putin today said he would decide within hours on a request for two regions of eastern Ukraine held by Russian-backed separatists to be recognized as independent, a move that could give Moscow a reason to openly send troops. Well, separately, Moscow said Ukrainian military saboteurs had tried to enter Russian territory in armed vehicles, leading to 5 deaths, an accusation dismissed as fake news by Kiev. Well, we knew they were planning this because it was said so. The developments fit a pattern repeatedly predicted by Western governments who accuse Russia of preparing to fabricate a pretext to invade Ukraine by blaming Kiev, the capital of Ukraine, for attacks and relying on pleas for help from separatist proxies. Washington said that Russia has now amassed a force numbering 169,000 to 190,000 troops in the region, including pro-Russian rebels in eastern Ukraine. Russia denies any plan to attack its neighbor, which broke away from Moscow's rule with the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991, but it has threatened unspecified, quote, military technical, end quote, action, unless it received sweeping security guarantees, including a promise that Ukraine will never join NATO. Well, European financial markets tumbled at the signs of increased confrontation after having briefly edged higher on the glimmer of hope that a summit might offer a path out of Europe's biggest military crisis in decades. The price of oil, Russia's main export, rose, while Russian shares and the ruble plunged. At a televised meeting of his Security Council, which normally meets behind closed doors, Putin restated Russia's demands, insisting that it was not enough for the West to say Ukraine was not ready to join NATO at present. He also said he would make a decision, quote, today, end quote, on the request made by a few hours earlier by the leaders of the Luhansk and Donetsk regions, which broke away from Kiev's control in 2014. Shelling has intensified since last week along a long simmering front line between the rebels and Ukrainian forces in East Ukraine. On Friday, the rebels abruptly started bussing out tens of thousands of civilians to Russia, accusing Kiev of planning an attack, which Ukraine denies as propaganda. Well, Ukraine and the West consider the rebels to be Russia's proxies and have been warning for weeks that Moscow might use them to construct a case for war. Washington says it is absurd to suggest that it would be Kiev that is choosing to escalate now with Russian troops amassed at its borders. The televised Security Council meeting in Moscow allowed Putin and his top advisors to outline their case. Dmitry Medvedev, the Security Council's deputy chairman, told the meeting it was, quote, obvious, end quote, that Ukraine did not need the two regions and that a majority of Russians would support their independence. Russia already offers passports to residents of the two regions, and Medvedev said there were now 800,000 Russian citizens there. Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu appeared to have to raise the stakes even further by saying that Ukraine, which renounced nuclear weapons after independence from the Soviet Union, had a greater nuclear potential, quote unquote, than Iran or North Korea. After talks in Brussels with NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg, British Foreign Minister Liz Truss said that Western countries were preparing for a worst-case scenario, quote unquote. The airlines such as Lufthansa, KLM, the Dutch airline, and Air France all canceled flights to Kiev. Hours earlier, French President Emmanuel Macron gave hope of a diplomatic solution, saying that U.S. counterpart Joe Biden had agreed in principle to meet. Putin said that Macron had told him Washington had changed its stance on Russia's security demands without specifying how. The White House said that Biden had accepted the meeting, quote, in principle, end quote, but only, quote, if an invasion hasn't happened, end quote. Washington, which heads the NATO alliance, has flatly rejected the idea of excluding Ukraine for good or reversing NATO's eastward enlargement of the last three decades, but has offered talks on weapons deployments and other security issues. Kremlin spokesperson Dmitry Peskov said a call or meeting between Putin and Biden could be set up at any time, but there was no concrete plans yet for a summit. Macron's office and the White House said details would be worked out by U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken and Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov later this week. Lavrov confirmed that he planned to meet Blinken in Geneva on Thursday and said there had been no progress in talks with the West on security. Blinken has said any meeting would be called off if Russia invades. Well, Ukraine said it must be included in any decisions aimed at resolving the crisis and that it had seen warnings online that hackers were preparing to launch cyber attacks on government agencies, banks, and the military on Tuesday. Well, that's tomorrow. No one can resolve our issue without us, top security official Alexei Danilov told a briefing. Russia's military said a group of saboteurs had crossed the frontier from Ukraine near the Russian city of Rostov on Monday morning, followed by two armored vehicles coming to evacuate them. It said five members of those forces had been killed when Russian forces repelled them. Ukraine said the report was fake news and that no Ukrainian forces were present in the Rostov area or region. Western countries say they're preparing sanctions that would hit Russian companies and individuals. People familiar with the matter said these could include barring U.S. financial institutions from processing transactions for Russian banks. Australian Chancellor Carl Nehammer said the European Union's package would include stopping certification of the Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline connecting Russia to Germany, which is awaiting German and European Union regulatory approval. Ukraine has called for sanctions to be imposed right away, saying to wait for an invasion would be too late. But the United States and Europe have said they will not act before an invasion, as the threat of sanctions should be a deterrent. European Union Foreign Policy Chief Josep Borrell said he would call an extraordinary meeting to agree sanctions only, quote, when the moment comes, end quote. And this report was by Reuters Bureau, writing by Kevin Liffey, editing by Peter Graff and Frank Jack Daniel. So very, very compelling latest information, to say the least. Now let's look at some other things that you may find intriguing as well here. Bear with me a moment. One second. Let's look at what else is happening on the financial marketplace. This time we look at Switzerland. Credit Suisse is on the defensive after dirty money data leaked. Well, evidently Investigative Journalism Network publishes client data. More than 18,000 accounts held more than $100 billion, the New York Times says. Credit Suisse rejects allegations of wrongdoing. Then, government says that Switzerland upholds international standards and shares lose almost 3%. So out of Zurich and Vienna, we read that Credit Suisse was plunged into a dirty money scandal on Monday after media outlets reported the Swiss bank had managed accounts for human rights abusers, fraudsters, and businessmen who had been placed under sanctions. One person leaked information on the accounts, which were held in decades ranging from the 1940s to 2010s, to Germany's Süddeutsche Zeitung. The German daily then shared it with the Organized Crime and Corruption Reporting Project and 46 other news organizations, including the New York Times, Britain's Guardian, and France's Le Monde. The Panama Papers-style investigation were published on Sunday and came as Credit Suisse, which denies any wrongdoing, tries to shake off a series of risk management scandals and a 1.6 billion Swiss franc or $1.75 billion loss in 2021 that has pummeled its stock. Well, the New York Times said the leaked data covered more than 18,000 accounts, collectively holding more than $100 billion. The revelations also turned the spotlight on Switzerland, only a little more than 3 years after it ditched, under U.S. pressure, a centuries-old culture of secrecy that had made the Alpine state a global, no-questions-asked vault for the world's rich. Credit Suisse, even if the allegations are unfounded, this raises questions about its business practices in wealth management and should tie up management having to spend time fighting fires instead of moving forward. The World Bank of Canada analysts had said, shares in Credit Suisse, which fell by almost a quarter last year, were almost 3% lower by mid-afternoon. Credit Suisse strongly rejects the allegations and insinuations about the bank's purported business practices, and quote, the bank said in a statement issued on Sunday night in response to the consortium's reports. Switzerland's financial watchdog, the Swiss Financial Market Supervisory Authority, or FINMA, which in 2008 tapped a Credit Suisse for deficiencies in writing over more laundering, fighting money laundering, said it was in contact with the bank about the matter. Well, compliance with money laundering regulations has been a focus of our supervisory activities for years now, FINMA spokesperson had said. Well, after a call from members of the European Parliament to review Switzerland's bank practices and perhaps include the country in the European Union's dirty money blacklist, the Finance Ministry's State Secretariat for International Finance said in an emailed statement, country meets, quote, all international standards on the exchange of information in tax matters and on fighting against money laundering, terrorist financing, and corruption. It added that Switzerland was now participating in the automatic exchange of information on account data with more than 100 countries. Credit Suisse described the issue as predominantly historical, adding that information had been taken out of context. The bank said it had received numerous inquiries from the consortium in the past 3 weeks and reviewed many of the accounts. Approximately 90% of the reviewed accounts are today closed or were in the process of closure seizure. To reports of the percent of the reviewed accounts are today closed or were in the process of closure due to receipt of the press inquiries, of which over 60% were closed before 2015, it said. The bank said it was satisfied with its checks on the remaining accounts. The Swiss Financial Center has no interest in money of dubious origin. It attaches the greatest importance to the maintenance of the its reputation and integrity, the Swiss Bankers Association had said. So very, very pertinent to say the least. Now, 1 second. 1 second here. Now, this is very interesting. In an exclusive from Reuters, we read that the U.S. plans to cut ties with targeted Russian banks if Ukraine is invaded, so say sources that spoke to Alexander Alper and Karen Freifeld. Out of Washington and New York, we read that President Joe Biden's administration has prepared an initial package of sanctions against Russia that includes barring U.S. financial institutions from processing transactions for major Russian banks, three people familiar with the matter had said. The measures, which would only be implemented if Russia invades Ukraine, aim to hurt the Russian economy by cutting the correspondent banking relationship between targeted Russian banks and U.S. banks that enable international payments. So while U.S. authorities have said that banking instructions were okay, so the United States will also wield its most powerful sanctioning tool against certain Russian individuals and companies by placing them on the specially designed or designated rather national's SDN list, effectively kicking them out of the United States banking system, banning their trade with Americans and freezing their U.S. assets, the same sources had said. Well, the White House and Treasury Department declined to comment. The sources said the package would change up to the last minute, and it was unclear who the targets would be. However, they believe the top Russian financial institutions, including VTB Bank, Sberbank, S-B-E-R-B-A-N-K, ZEB, V-E-B, and Gazprombank are possible targets. 1 second. Okay, so let's see what else is happening here then. The experts consulted by Reuters said that while the correspondent banking tool lacks the punch of an SDN designation, which freezes a bank's assets, it could still deal a meaningful blow to the target banks by making it difficult to transact in U.S. dollars, the global reserve currency. And much of global trade is transacted in dollars. It's unclear whether Russian banks would be rebelled to the SDN. All right, so I think that's about it. So we'll see where this goes, and we'll see what else is happening. One more minute. 1 second here. Think that we've got it all. Okay, I think we got nothing else here. Oh, this is very interesting. I had not read this before. This comes out of Mexico. The Mexican president has urged the United States to end the shame, quote unquote, of funding opposition groups. Mexican President Andrés Manuel López Obrador today urged the United States government to stop funding groups in Mexico that are critical of his administration, calling the financial support a shame, quote unquote, in a breach of Mexico's sovereignty. The rebuke comes at a time of friction between the United States and Mexico over reform proposed by López Obrador to strengthen state control of the power market, which the administration of U.S. President Joe Biden has warned could limit investment in renewable energy. López Obrador also sent a diplomatic note to the United States government in May expressing concerns over U.S. funding for political groups in Mexico. On Monday, he renewed his call for the United States to curb funding against what he described as opposition groups without stating any by name. We are asking the U.S. government to stop funding groups that openly act as opponents of government in our case of a legally and legitimately constituted government, he told his morning news conference. It is a shame for any government in the world to get involved in the internal life of another country, plus handing over money. López Obrador has frequently accused Mexicans Against Corruption and Impunity, MCCI, a group that investigates political corruption, of meeting with which underlines the place here. He's told this to his morning news conference. It is a shame that any government in the world can get involved in the internal life of another country, plus handing over money. So, and there was no immediate response from the U.S. Embassy in Mexico to a request of comment. So we'll see where this goes. This looks and sounds like it's going to blow up in our face. Reporting is by Diana Beth Solomon and Raul Cortez, editing by Howard Goler. So we'll have to see where that goes. One second. Now let's see what else is on the national and world stage. One second. All right, I don't think there's anything more that we could find here. No, evidently not. All right, so that's our story today. We'll speak to you tomorrow. Let me just see. Oh, tomorrow is Tuesday, so because it is Tuesday tomorrow, we're going to have our... One second, let me just quickly look. Want to make sure I got this right. Yeah, we're going to have Jeff Swartz and Brendan Beery. So we'll talk to them about the Constitution. That'll be very, very interesting. All right, so we'll speak to you tomorrow. Be well. Thank you for being with us today. Definitely a pleasure. Bye. Let me go back to our screen.